Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning. It's the 21st of July. Very nice to have you with us, as it always is. And I hope you know that, because we mean it. Let me go around and introduce our panel.
Joe's in a really funny mood today. Have you noticed that? I know, he's acting really strange.
A little wacky?
Yeah, a little wacky.
All right. I will introduce the panel. I will introduce how you can be a part of the show, and then we'll actually talk about some issues. First, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Joe, and hi, everybody.
Hello. And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here.
Good morning.
And Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Very nice to have you, as it always is, roundtable at WAMC.org. If you would like to get in on the fun and be a part of our conversation, we'd love to hear what you have to say. We may even read your letter on the air. We may not, but we may do that too. Here, let's go on with some interesting stories. It was we have some studies, some scientific studies that we're going to talk about today. We have some good media news. We have a look at what happened in the prison escape in Dannemora. And let us begin with the big news story, which is, of course, the Cuban embassies, which I guess was one of those things that we knew after in December when things were starting to open up that this would be the case. But yesterday, the embassies in Cuba and in the United States opened up. The flags were raised. And the diplomatic relations begin.
Well,
now what?
That's all well and good. I want the ferry set up from Miami so we can go.
Well, this is just one step, right?
Yeah, and there are many. It's an extremely complicated thing to restore relations that have been cut for 50 years. It's kind of interesting to see how much remains to be done.
Well, there are a lot of people who think, like my wife, Roselle, who's been there several times and who feels that one of the things that might happen is that the American corporations and others move in and build the big hotels and knock down these wonderful neighborhoods and things that it might really do some architectural damage. Although I have to say, we all think it's a great, she does and I do, think it's a great thing. Look, we've made our peace with China. We've made our peace with the Russians. The idea that we in Vietnam that we don't do it with, you know, poor little Cuba is really outrageous.
Yeah, it just shows you how personal a small segment and a vocal segment, you know, the Cuban nationals that came here and really were against this move and are continuing to fight it. And as Rosemary says, you know, this is just the first step. It isn't like we've taken, you can now hop the ferry or you can immediately go there or Cubans can immediately come here. But that is coming unless something gets in the way.
I have no doubt it's coming.
Yeah,
I have no doubt it's coming, and it'll happen faster than anybody thinks.
The faster it happens, the better, because then it can't be undone. Sort of like Obamacare gets in, and people are enrolling, and the system is working, and it becomes harder and harder to undo what's been done.
You know, guys, one of the things that we just said, but we have to talk about, is the fact that Florida, as we saw in a Hanging Chad example, is really the key to winning the presidency at this stage. And so it was presumed all along you couldn't do this because you would lose Florida and you'd lose a huge segment. And then we found out, as we've talked about many times, that the younger Cubans didn't enjoy the same kind of perspective that the older folks did. And, you know, there was this Rubicon that got crossed and that was it.
Well, I agree, too, though. If we've already made peace with some of our most onerous enemies across the globe, not all of them, there's still a few out there, it just seems amazing that we would keep up this grudge that
sure.
we've had since...
look, the Castro...
Well, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, Alan, that the idea of the changing views of young people affect policy in other areas, too. Our views on Israel are changing as younger Jewish Americans don't feel the same way about Israel as their elders.
I think that's true in some cases. It's certainly true in Israel itself, where you know you have a wide split on some of these issues, including the Iran deal.
Absolutely.
I think I read yesterday there was about 50-50 among citizens there.
Among citizens of Israel, 50-50 over the Iranian deal.
Little less, but...
Yeah. But despite the government's really strong.
Divided, but not radically divided.
No, so that this is... You know, I think Rosemary's wisdom is exactly correct. If this thing gets done, once it's done, and assuming that the Ayatollahs and the others don't do what they're capable of, which is to, you know, start building stuff a million miles underground and doing all that stuff, assuming that they don't, I can't see how this doesn't benefit everybody by the time it's all done.
The Iran nuclear deal.
Get down on those beaches, eating, drinking cocktails out of a coconut, going to the, listen to the flamenco music. American consumers will demand that we continue relations. It's fabulous.
Yeah, with Cuba, the amazing thing is that in every single bit of news coverage that I've seen out of Havana, and the U.S. Embassy, they somehow work in a photograph of a 1957 Chevrolet.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the first thing that's going to happen is parts will be moved over. That'll be the first gesture.
You know, they're really kind of phony because they have the outside of the 57 and other, you know, era cars, but the insides are all like little motors. They're all completely redone with foreign, you know, Korean stuff.
Yeah. So. I was just going to say before that, you know, I have no great admiration for the Castro brothers, really. I think that some of the things that they've done are quite despicable. But so that could be said about anybody from Putin to, you know, anybody else. And we just have to try to build bridges and make it work.
We said about Great Britain. We go there all the time, but never cut relations with them.
I'm sorry?
Could be said. Bad things are done by many governments. And you maintain friendships with them.
Including our very, very good friends, the Saudis. You want to talk about
a
dictatorship?
I agree with you there.
Well, just back to Cuba. One of the benefits of this ending of this, 50-year or more, longer than 50-year kind of isolation is that they will elevate their economy. They have a very poor, poor economy, and this will elevate that, and it will help them, and that'll benefit a country that'll become a good trade partner of the U.S.
These questions of that are brought up in the article, will the trade embargo, which has crippled Cuba's economy, be lifted, and if so, when? Will the Cuban government improve its human rights record and incorporate outsiders into the political spectrum? How much and how fast will the lives of ordinary Cubans who earn $20 a month on average improve?
Yeah, I mean, that's like with an American slant, you know. And there are lots of problems in Cuba, but they also did some things right, which we tend to overlook. They have a huge emphasis on schooling and on health, which our country could look to, including the training of doctors, education, universal education of high quality for all. Castro didn't do everything wrong.
No, he didn't.
No, I think, too, that Fidel Castro is near the end of his life, and his brother probably...
They've been saying that for a long time.
I know. It's amazing how he's hung on. But and I always had thought that the day he passed away would be the day that this would happen. But it looks like it's happening before that. So when he's finally out of the picture, you know, there'll be some... a psychological clearing of the air for those who've been most opposed to this when he's gone. So.
Yeah, but you know, Mike, I don't think there's... I have no doubt that what has happened here could not have been done by Raul unless Fidel was saying, go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
Well, anyway, we had a very interesting letter, if I may, Joe. Do we have time for it? From James. I just returned from Cuba, a fascinating country filled with warm, kind, and helpful people. There's an obvious lack of prosperity, and the city is in decay. However, the Cuban people themselves do not appear destitute. In fact, you will see more poverty in some U.S. cities than in Cuba. I saw not one homeless person. However, there was an obvious lack of information. I did not see a single newspaper or magazine for sale, and the only books available at the airport were political and historical in nature. I'm sure that there are newspapers for sale. I'm sure that they bear the imprimatur of
the government puts out a newspaper, yeah. and they're still read in the, you know, some of them in the shops. Mm. Yeah,
but there's always baseball.
That's right. There's always baseball indeed. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk about other issues as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Voice Theater in Woodstock, New York, presenting Our Country's Good through July 26th at the air-conditioned Birdcliff Theater, voicetheatre.org. Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York, offering custom framing and local art in the Capital Region, open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956. And Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We have a few minutes before we go over to a news break. Mike, let's go to a story that is in the Times Union this morning, which has been going on for, we've been hearing about this for, oh God, a long time. And now the red light cameras are upon us.
Right nearby WAMC studios along Central Avenue in Albany. That's where one of the first of two red light cameras were turned on yesterday. And it's going to be, there's going to be more. It's funny, yesterday or last night, the Common Council formally affirmed the new police chief, Brendan Cox. And he said, somebody told me they noticed an awful lot of people slowing down at these intersections.
I'm sure it's true. I tell you, the interesting thing is not the people who go through red lights. They are dastardly. People who go through red lights, because that's how you kill. But the ones that they're apparently getting are the people who do not come to a full stop before on a red light. I know people who are very close to me who I am forever talking to about that. You have to stop if there's a red light, and that's when you get that little jolt. A full stop is you stop, you put your foot on the brake, and then boom, you sort of rock a bit. You know, mm-hmm. are you listening? I mean, do you understand?
I understand what
you're
saying.
Because I'm not very clear.
Because the person near you, that you know,
yes,
are they listening to you? Is the question?
Yes, that person listens to me every morning, and I always say, "You did not stop. I did stop."
One of the implications of red light cameras in other communities has been an increase in rear end collisions, where one person's hesitant, and then they decide to stop, and the car following them is kind of caught off guard. Because
shame on
a
the
pod
car following them.
Right, they're following too close.
Now they're texting, you know.
Or they're texting. Right.
Shame on them.
Well, that just exacerbates it. But and in some cases outside of this community, they have said that when the revenues are not there, because that's one of the advantages of having this program. It's
you get $1 million.
The revenues are shared with the community. The private company that runs it just cuts a check for every month, and the city of Albany is hoping to use some of that money to balance their budget and get the enforcement at the same time and make these intersections safer. But in some communities, the companies have been accused of shortening the time of the yellow light, the caution light, in order to increase the number of people they snare.
Well, that, and, to use a word now Alan used earlier, is dastardly.
Dastardly, indeed.
I remember a story in which it was, I believe, a southern town, and there was a cop in a building, and he was able to manipulate the light. So it would catch people, you know, in a speed trap as they were going through.
I was, my mother-in-law and I were going over to, we were in Massachusetts over in Pittsfield. We were going to a museum, and I was in some of the back streets, and I was driving her car, which is a new car, and I'd never really driven it before. But while I was looking for a place to park, I inadvertently went through a stop sign. I will admit it, I went through a stop sign. The car went nuts. There was a little thing in the middle, and it's just started to, like...
Bad person.
Right. I was just like, I bought the car, and they're basically telling the cops that I
want
the
car.
This is not good. How do you disengage that? Yeah. That doesn't seem to be, like, a good feature.
So there's a sensor on the stop sign, and when you go past
I don't know. I think it's a sensor in the car.
Uh-huh.
But there has to be something on the stop sign. How else would it
know? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it triggers a sensor in the car. Or maybe it's an image of the stop sign. I mean,
And then off it goes.
Okay, I'm totally opposed to machines ruling lives in this Big Brother way. This is really spooky. On the other hand, I've driven in countries where they don't have stoplights, and it's scary. Oh my gosh, I can't just do it. It's just terrifying. So I'm very torn on this issue.
Well, why would you be torn, Rosemary? I don't get that at all.
You don't get that at all, because I would rather, if there was a policeman out there and he caught me, that would be fine. But the fact that it's a machine and they're faulty and you can't talk back to it, you can't say I didn't do it even when you did, that seems wrong.
You shouldn't talk back to a cop either.
You have no right of appeal. Exactly. I don't like that. On the other hand,
this took an act of the state legislature for Albany to have this authority to do it. You just can't go put one up anytime you want.
The state legislature doesn't inspire me with confidence
either.
And on the other hand, driving in today, a woman just like I stopped at the stop line, she whooshed right through it. So it does happen.
It's hard.
Well, all I know is that in Great Barrington, where I live, on Hollenbeck Avenue, it has another name, which is the
give the address.
The GPS coordinates.
The Indianapolis Speedway. And there's a big sign up there that says 25 miles an hour. So the most wonderful thing has happened. A wonderful lady has organized everybody, and the kids have made signs, go slow. Young people, children live here. Aww. And we made one in front of our house. We said, go slow, old people live here.
We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. The New York Times has an article today that gives some keys to the escape that happened last month in Dannemora. And the two men, David Sweat and Richard Matt, who left... escaped the Clinton Correctional Facility, and so now they have kind of put a rough idea of how this happened.
Well, it's not rough. The guy's singing like a canary. He's right about what he did.
Just to be clear here, Sweat was interrogated while he was a patient at the Albany Medical Center Hospital by some of the officials of the State Department of Corrections. They in turn briefed a whole bunch of managers, and some of those managers have spoken to the New York Times. They're not named here. So we're getting it a little third hand here, but the story is compelling, isn't it?
It certainly is. So he would just night after night, David Sweat would go through this hole that he sawed in the back of his cell, and then he would go down in the tunnels, and he was just looking for an escape route, night after night after night, looking for the way to get out, and then eventually... found it.
Some of the details are amazing. Like it was during the time when the heat was on and they were close to heat pipes. So he rigged up a fan on a light bulb switch or something, so he could be cool. He also was sweating and dirty, so he would keep a set of clothes down there and then change into clean clothes before he came back into his cell.
Yeah, and every night for month after month after month of doing this, and they never had an idea. But what was interesting to me is that they did not have a good plan for getting away.
Well, they had somebody who ended up not being there to pick them up, an employee of the prison as
right,
well.
Right, but they spent a lot more time on getting out of the prison than what was going to happen. No plan B after that. Yeah.
The New York Times writes, this is also a story of neglect by those who were supposed to keep Mr. Sweat behind bars, of rules and procedures ignored, and of a culture of complacency among some prison guards, employees, and their supervisors, whose laziness and apparent inaction, and in at least one instance, complicity, made the escape possible.
Mm-hmm. And they named the governor, by the way, in the article. They said, it's really a great failure on the part of the criminal, an embarrassment of the criminal justice system, and the governor. Wow, that was almost an editorial.
Oh, but isn't it a blemish on an administration when this happens on your watch?
Well, anything that happens on your watch could be a blemish. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know that Andrew went out of his way to try to prevent that perception from happening. He, you know, his head popped out of the
There's just one detail in here that just is the most amazing to me, is that using a sledgehammer and some other pilfered hand tools, he began to chip away at the concrete of the tunnel wall. I mean, how could you do that?
And somebody said, one of the other prisoners said, I thought I heard some sawing going on.
Sawing. Oh, right.
And what did he think?
Matt said I was stretretching the canvas on my paintings, because he did do paintings when he, the other inmate who was killed by authorities when he was caught outside the prison.
I think what those men did was remarkable, and I've said this before. I think you read this story, and you read the guy was just in the middle of the night every night wandering around the innards of the building, because that was the closest thing to a life he'd ever have. Because what we do with our criminals is put them in a cell, in a cage, and that's what they're doing. That's why the guy's talking. He's trying not to spend the next, what will it be, 40, 50 years of his life in a single cage in solitary confinement, because he embarrassed people who are saying to us, "Oh, be on our side. We've dedicated our lives to keeping you safe from the bad guys and being guards." These guards were doing nothing. Certainly, complacency incompetency.
You're not implying, are you, that all guards are bad? Are you?
I know that all the guards at Dannemora, at the correctional facility, were questioned.
ALO?
All of them were questioned, Alan. So all of them might have been responsible in some way, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, why? These are men who not only did they not catch them with sledgehammers and saws, but they were put into a honors program of privileges that now are threatened for everybody else who did not do this.
That's true.
So our way of punishment, closed off, secret, just trust us, we're doing the right for you, is ineffective. And the people being punished will be other prisoners whose lives will become even more horrible, and there's more reason for them to want to tunnel out like
this. This is a very serious subject, obviously.
Yeah,
And we really have to pay a lot of attention to reforms in the criminal justice system.
Right.
But just for openers, Rosemary, since you feel so strongly about this, you got a Lemuel Smith who was a
serial killer in Albany in the 1960s.
What was her name, Donna? Donna Payne?
Donna Payne was a correctional officer.
And he killed her.
At East Fishkill?
Now, if you don't put a guy like that in a cell, how are you going to rehabilitate? I mean, we don't want to kill. We've decided that as a society. We don't want to kill anymore.
I'm not saying you put no one in a prison cell. Mm-hmm. The president has made very clear we have way, 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 way too many people in this kind of facility.
Right.
And why are the prisons in places like Dannemora, where the only jobs available are as prison guards? These are not people who have a choice to do anything else but. So they're not doing. There's no impetus to do a different job. If that you're not inclined to do it, you still take it.
They were put there as a economic development, jobs creating opportunity. But more than 100 years ago,
human rights violation. Yeah.
So I just have, because I found this whole article fascinating.
So did I.
But there's a graphic component to it, which obviously doesn't work well on the radio. But if you get a chance to look at it, but there's a photo of the catwalk, and then the photo of the catwalk, you see the only color that is coming in this entire photo is of the actual cells,
the two holes.
And the point is that these holes were there. And the prisoners knew that the catwalk had not been patrolled for not days, not months, for years.
Right.
For years. So these holes were there for a really long time. And that is the kind of thing.
Didn't they cover the holes with a Raquel Welch poster? Or am I thinking of a movie?
No,
you are. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because in his testimony to these inquisitors, he made it clear that
he was inspired by.
He was that Shawshank was really something to compete with.
He was proud that it took him only 20 years, only 10 years to make the escape, where it took Tim Robbins or his character Anthony DeFrenzy or whatever his name is.
DeFrame.
20.
Wow.
I mean, I think you just have to be heartless to just keep reminding me of all the bad things he did, and not to say that this man accomplished something pretty remarkable. I couldn't do it. I hope he should be proud of it.
A convicted murderer who killed a sheriff deputy in Broome County. But what he did do is he exposed an enormous, set of weaknesses in our prison system.
Yep.
From what I said, was there any comment from the governor or from the administration about?
Not in this story.
In the article.
Yeah, not in this story.
I didn't see it.
We did hear from Jill, who said, "Hi, panel. I'd like to know what inspired or coerced the guy to explain their escape method in such detail. From my understanding, got nothing of any use in exchange. He'll now spend the rest of his life in solitary confinement for 23 hours every day." You know what I think, Jill? I think he was proud of what he did.
He boasted. I mean, he chuckled.
It was more than that, though, too. He was trying to negotiate where he would end up,
what facility he would end up,
because it was in the original stories about it when the officials were giving out information.
And he's being kept out in central New York at Five Points Correctional Facility in Romulus, and that he's being kept in one of those 23.5-hour-a-day single cells that are about the size of this studio, which is pretty darn small.
You know, one of the things that was so interesting is when you mentioned, why do we put these prisons upstate? One of the reasons is real estate is cheap, relatively cheap up there. So if you take a look at Sing Sing, for example, right now, right outside of New York in Ossining.
Up the river.
Up the river. That's worth a lot of money now. And people keep talking about...
There'll be condos there, I'm sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's interesting to see all the county jails that are built along rivers, which used to be cheap properties where the warehouses were. And now you could build prime condos there.
Well, you were saying it was a human rights violation to build a prison in Dannemora. Why is that?
No, I said it was a human rights violation the way we treat prisoners.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But it does tend to keep them away from their support, keep them away from the families. It makes it very difficult for families to visit.
You lose all hope. Yeah. You lose all vision that there's ever going to be anything else. No one is tapping into, intelligence. Obviously, this guy had intelligence and imagination, so it gets used in this way. It just seems like it makes guarding as difficult
as life.
Well,
as bad as it is in New York, I think it's better than the states that contracted out to private contractors where it's apparently horrible. Well, this is horrible, perhaps, but the way that they're treated by these private contractors in some states is...
Yeah, it is horrible.
Like Vermont does it. Right. They send them off to other states.
I just want to remind everybody that, that sheriff's deputy is dead and his family...
Gosh. I just so hate this argument that if I express compassion for the escapees, that means I don't feel for people who are victims of crime. Of course you do.
Please.
You can feel both.
Please, I told you, I said to you, I'm sure you heard me, that I agreed with you about we had to work on these issues. And we do. And we have to make our prisons more humane. And you're absolutely right when Obama points out that people who did victimless crime, nonviolent crimes, are in for 30 years. It's crazy. That's just crazy.
It is. Chris Churchill, our columnist, has a story today about a teenager in Albany who is accused of stealing a pair of sneakers, and he's in for several years in prison because of it. And there's people championing that cause, and he's trying to, bring that out.
There's also an article in New Yorker, since we're giving out assignments, that says that the president is wrong in one thing, that to really make a substantial change in the prison system in this country, badly needed, you can't just talk about nonviolent prisoners. You got to talk about lessening the sentences for some violent crime. And that's the sticking point, because that immediately makes people nervous. That's politics.
Well, first
but that's
first.
What has to happen.
Right. First thing, I think you're right, Alan. I mean, it has to start somewhere. By the way, when he comes to the United States in September, Pope Francis is going to visit a prison.
He's made a big issue of this. Yeah. He's speaking for populations that have no voice.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back and finish up our time together. We welcome your letters as always, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from PS21 Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting Light Up Troy Family Circus with acrobats, jugglers, and more on Friday at 7:30 p.m., ps21chatham.org. Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete, available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores, mannysoliveoil.com. and Springhouse Spa, Sharon Springs, New York, a modern-day spa in a historic setting providing customized spa services, massage, and skincare. SpringhouseSpa.com for appointments.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion. We have a few minutes, so let's get to we have several minutes, so let's get to some interesting articles. Let's talk to about our friends at Gawker. Do we have friends at Gawker? I don't know. When two editors at Gawker have resigned over an article's removal. Now, I'm going to read this, and we can get into what this is all about.
Are we going to name the CEO who's named? That article does not. I find that very interesting.
That is very interesting.
Well, it's the New York Times. Why, they wouldn't have done that in the first place.
Oh, that's true. Reporting from a rumor gossip center.
Yeah. Well, what are we talking about, Joe?
Can we say the name of the? Can we say the name of the? The man whose brother is more famous by far than he is. Are we allowed to say it?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Michael Geithner.
Okay.
When Gawker posted an article on Thursday night about a married male media executive's futile attempt to hire a gay escort, it was hoping to create a scandal. But this was not the scandal it had in mind. In the face of, Gawker's founder, Nick Denton, voluntarily took down the post on Friday, a highly unusual step for the 12-year-old company. This may have helped quell one controversy, but it created another. Monday morning, the executive office editor of Gawker Media, Tommy Craggs, and the editor of Gawker, Max Reed, quit in protest. The inflammatory post was now at the center of a debate over journalistic integrity, with Mr. Craggs and Mr. Reed saying that the decision to delete it against their wishes constituted an unforgivable violation of the site's editorial independence and made for a strange spectacle, two editors standing on principle in defense of such an unsavory article.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, you were laughing because Gawker and integrity are oxymorons, right? Isn't that
well, some would argue that, yeah. Alan, by outing a person who is gay deliberately to just embarrass him and create a scandal that generates a lot of clicks on the internet so that it can support your advertising. I mean, that's some would say that is below an ethical standard that most of us like to abide to. It does say that Tommy Craggs, he was questioned about it, but he did not interfere with the editorial process or ask to see a copy of the article before it was published. So, I mean, I guess they don't really have a lot of oversight. Otherwise, they'd be having these moral dilemmas more often. So it's better not to.
Their editorial policy, this is a rumor and gossip central.
Right, that's
right. Their editorial policy is we will print it if it happened and if it's interesting. And in this case, they say it did, although Michael Geithner, who's only, I mean, he's a fabulous businessman. He's head of Condé Nast, but his brother is the one who's the star. He's the former treasurer, says it didn't happen. So we don't even know that this outing is really true. I don't really trust the vetting process.
Yeah.
I do not trust the vetting process of Gawker. He says it isn't true. They say it's true, the officials said, and therefore we have the right to run it. Now, to me, this makes me worried because I have always worked, and we all have, for publications that would not run this sort of thing, even if it were true and it indeed would be interesting, unless or a compelling reason. What's the compelling reason to out, if it's true, Michael Geithner? None. It's just purely God. That's wrong.
Would you print the name of a celebrity who was raped, the victim of a rape?
Rape is a
crime.
Because
it was true?
Rape is a crime, and I would print, and I do believe in printing the names of rape victims, especially if they tell you to. But this is different. This is not a crime. He's a gay man, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know that he is.
No, we don't. And that's it. So it's a really disreputable organization arguing on the basis of really sound and I think important journalism ethical principles. And
you know, it's interesting because you know the New York Times has always had a lot of people to contest any kind of lawsuit, and they do, and they're very good about it. Some of the most famous lawsuits in the country have come out of that. New York Times, you know, Sullivan,
yeah.
And all. But on the other hand, and Gawker, I take it, has a lot of money, and they could defend themselves too. But you get a small newspaper, which can hardly make the printing money for the following week
and the payroll.
And
right.
And somebody calls up and says, "This just isn't true." Now I want you to know, if you don't delete this, I'm going to sue you, and that's a tough one, very tough.
Because the cost of defending yourself,
absolutely,
even though you are correct and you're confident that your sources are correct and your attribution is correct, is the litigation alone can bankrupt you.
The whole issue of the media outing people I find really fascinating, and it's something that's changing as societal views on homosexuality have changed too. If you remember the Arthur Ashe story, the press outed him. Well, he actually confessed because he knew that the press
confessed
was going to come
out. Confessed to what?
Confessed to being having AIDS.
Right, which he got
and
from
he was
a
not,
blood transfusion.
And he was not homosexual, but he was outed as an AIDS person, so that's why I'm conflating them, Mike. That was wrong. Why did that story have to be printed? The argument then was he was an important public figure, so at least there was something on the media side.
Was it Sports
side.
Illustrated that broke
yes,
that story?
Yes, it was. Yeah. So then you have, there's other people. Oliver Sipple, the man who protected President Ford from being shot by Mary Jane, whatever her name was, the assassin in the early 1980s.
Sarah Jane Moore?
That's it, Sarah Jane Moore. He stopped her, and he was outed by the press, by the San Francisco press. And Harvey Milk from Albany is the one who, he said, yeah, he's a gay man. We see him in the bar. He's a friend. The man was in hiding. That's why he was in San Francisco, didn't want his family to know. And the press, Herb Cain, outed him because, again, he was a public figure. That led to a whole Supreme Court case.
Well, I think
Geithner is, there's no, he's not a public figure himself. He's a successful
businessman. But it's not
even him. Yeah. Well, it's his brother who is the real...
Who may or may not be gay, and
it
may or may not matter.
Exactly. I just can't see a reason for
David.
This. Yeah, David is the brother, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So Jeff
exactly.
said, Rosemary should not be using his name. He is a private citizen, and to keep naming him is despicable. The escort sold the information to Gawker. This is blackmail journalism.
Yeah, it is blackmail, and I agree with you. And I think the name now is in the public domain because they published it, because it's stories about it are everywhere. And it doesn't. I just think it's kind of silly that the New York Times didn't use his name. I wish that they had interviewed him. He has a, I hope he sues them. Be an interesting case.
I mean, from what I see, they were the only ones that didn't print the name. I mean, it's all over.
Yeah,
it's through the press.
We have an important letter, Joe. I just want to take a second. The incidental music played on the roundtable for the last 2 days has been delightful. Is the playlist posted somewhere? Indeed it is, isn't it, Joe?
It is.
Right. At WAMC.org.
/roundtable.
Yeah.
That
is important, isn't it?
Yes. Let's go to we have 4 minutes and 2 studies. So
okay.
I want to go with the men who harass study.
Yeah.
This is from video games. The headline, which is a clever one, says men who harass women online are quite literally losers, according to a new study. Here's the research finding that surprised no one. The men most likely to harass women online are the men most likely to have their own problems. There's a new study from the University of New South Wales and Miami University. They published this last week. The duo watched how men treated women during 163 plays of the video game Halo 3. As they watched the games play out and tracked the comments the players made to each other, the researchers observed that no matter their skill level or how the game went, Men tended to be pretty cordial to each other. Male players were good at the game, also tended to pay compliments to other male and female players. Some male players, however, the ones who were less skilled at the game and performing worse relative to their peers, made frequent nasty comments to the female gamers. In other words, sexist dudes are literally losers.
They lose at video games. Yes.
And okay. They tend to be sexist.
So if
we
you
knew
are,
that.
I'm not really good at video games, but I don't regard myself as a sexist.
Hmm. Well, you don't yell. You're not that kind of person.
Not a yeller or a screamer.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we take this seriously?
Yeah, I think it's pretty. I think the interesting things about the story are that they're looking at video games to track human behavior, and there seems to be a correlation. That's very interesting. The CIA, we know, or the NASA, NSA has used video games to try to trap spies. So I think there's a whole story there that hasn't been fully told on the use of games. I don't know.
I just play Angry Birds mostly.
Yeah.
I hope this one will show up on the Academic Minute.
They're just angry, not sexist.
Yeah. So I don't know if they say if there are male or female birds in there. But.
We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who helped out and joined in. Thanks to Alan and Mike and Rosemary. Rosemary, are you out?
I'm on a vacation.
We'll see you in a few...
couple of weeks.
All right. Sheesh. We'll miss you, and we look forward to when you return.
Thank you.
Mike, you're on tomorrow?
I didn't think I was.
All right.
Perhaps
well,
I am.
We'll find out.
I thought next Monday.
Sit down. This may be a shock. We'll be right back.